Well, that's certainly a piece of music that needs no introduction. For many years, that was used as the interval signal and was played on the hour by the World Service of Radio Moscow. Now, since Radio Moscow became Voice of Russia, which then just recently, a couple of months ago, became Sputnik, many things have changed. One of the things that has changed is how people perceive media from Moscow or Russia. Now, back in the old days of Radio Moscow, people would listen, such as myself, and we knew that it was blatant propaganda, but we never would make fun of them. There was always a certain amount of respect of what they were doing because, well, they were putting the Soviet viewpoint across. But that all changed with the emergence of stations like RT, for example, which has brought Russian propaganda to a completely different level, a level of, some might say, complete lunacy. Now, we are going to be talking propaganda on today's program, specifically from Russia. But before we do, let's have a little fun first. My good friend David Smith, who I met the first time many years ago when we worked together at Radio Canada International, was also an avid shortwave listener. And he had very fun memories of Radio Moscow, one in particular that is rather funny.
I listened to all kinds of radio. I was 9 years old at the time, and like any shortwave fanatic, you know, I scanned. In fact, it was before scanned. They were only analog radios, no digital. So, you know, I'd search the band for whatever I could find. And Radio Moscow had a program that I particularly liked as a nine-year-old because geography was my favorite subject at school. And on Wednesdays on Radio Moscow, they had a program called Round About the Soviet Union. And every Wednesday, that program would describe geographically a region of the USSR. So I found that very interesting, you know. But, you know, for people who wondered why I listened to Radio Moscow, I also listened to Radio Tirana, I listened to the VOA, I listened to Radio Havana, Cuba, I listened to KOL Israel, I listened to everything I could find. But let's talk about Radio Moscow. I listened regularly, and my mother, whose family comes from the former Soviet Union, and I should make it even clearer, left when the former Soviet Union came into existence, because they weren't exactly on the winning side in 1917. she didn't like the idea of me listening to Radio Moscow. And I don't want to embarrass my mother. I guess I already have, as this story will illustrate. She was nervous. She thought that anything regarding communism and people in North America, especially who came from that part of the world, would lead to the Mounties, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, having a file on those people. So she came into my room one day where I listened to the radio and said, David, don't listen to that because the Mounties have a file on us. And she truly was nervous about this. This was a long time ago. This was 1969. I didn't really, she told me I couldn't listen to Radio Moscow, so of course I had to. But I had to find a way to solve the problem, to bring my mother on board. So I did what any shortwave listener does. I wrote to Radio Moscow, and I wrote to them and said, Dear Radio Moscow, Moscow mailbag, I'm having a problem with my mother. Can you help? She doesn't want me listening to Radio Moscow because she thinks we'll get into some kind of trouble with the local authorities. I'm sure the language I used was much simpler than that. But anyway, I wrote them, and I'm sure this is the kind of letter they love getting in Moscow. Because they answered, as they always did. They always answered. They sent a letter back to me and said, Dear David, please ask your mother to be by the radio at such and such a time and such a day. Okay. And without telling my mother why, I invited her into my room where the radio was at the designated time, turned on the radio, and there was Vladimir Posner. And, Radio Moscow listeners and people who watch Russia Today will know who Vladimir Posner is. A lot of Americans know him because he was on a popular American talk show for a while. In any case, Vladimir Posner had an answer to my question for my mother. And he said her name on the air. And he said, please don't worry about your son, David, listening to Radio Moscow. And he gave our address and names, and I saw my mother changing color, red, green, white. She was terrified, angry. But he continued delivering his message. He said, you know, the USSR and Canada are two great northern countries. We've got a lot in common, and we work together to create a better life for all, and the usual sort of stuff. And all very positive. You know, it's nation building, friendship building in the north. And my mother was so angry when this was over. You will never listen to that radio in this house again. We're in big trouble. And that's when I discovered headphones.
David Smith recounting some of, well, one of his favorite memories of listening to Radio Moscow. Now, for those who are too young to remember what Radio Moscow sounded like, here's an example of one of their typical programs.
Radio Moscow presents another edition of the series Soviet Viewpoint.
Military experts of the socialist countries within the Warsaw Treaty Organization and of NATO countries are holding consultations on prospects of reducing armed forces and conventional armaments in Europe. What about this from our commentator Yuri Sultan, and this is what he writes. This problem has always been important, but it's getting even more acute today. And judging by Radio Moscow Mail, some people have misgivings whether the risk of a military clash won't increase with the abolition of the Soviet and American medium and shorter-range nuclear missiles. And agreement has already been reached practically about the abolition. These people reason in roughly this way. Nuclear arms are a deterrent, and the less nuclear arms there are, the more temptation will be for one of the sides to provoke hostilities. And accordingly, there are enough forces and arms for such hostilities. 2-3 million men strong armies confront each other in Europe. It's claimed in some NATO capitals that the Warsaw Treaty countries have a superiority in these forces and arms. Well, the claims are false. There is an asymmetry in the types of armed forces, but an approximate parity is maintained. And this has been confirmed again and again by experts, including Western experts. The point is different, though. The NATO military quarters intend to take revenge for real nuclear cuts, to compensate for these cuts, one, through modernizing conventional armaments, which would be as destructive as nuclear arms. The Soviet Union's stand, coordinated with other socialist countries, lies in reducing troops and armaments in Europe to such levels when the possibility of their use for offensive operations is ruled out. And this can be done, above all, through scrapping nuclear arms and through cutting the more dangerous offensive types of weapons, such as tanks, tactical aircraft, and helicopter gunships. And naturally, the menace of offensive operations would be less with a reduction in the total number of troops. The Warsaw Treaty countries propose reducing the troops by 25% by the beginning of the 90s. Representatives of the socialist countries within the Warsaw Treaty Organization are making such concrete proposals at the consultations in Vienna. And one would like to hope that these proposals will be considered by the NATO countries in a constructive spirit. That analysis was contributed by our Radio Moscow commentator, Yuri Sultan.
And that ends Soviet Viewpoint, which came to you from Radio Moscow.
Well, that was just an example of a typical Radio Moscow commentary or any news program that you would hear during the week on the World Service. But you see, if you listen to it, very different from the kind of material that the Russians are putting out today. Very different. Nobody would make fun of that. They go, well, that was the, as the piece is called, the Soviet viewpoint. Nobody made fun of it. Of course, things have changed over the years. Well, our good friend Pauline Macquarie is in Ukraine right now. And my first question to her is, why is she in Ukraine? Because this subject that we're talking about today is tied in with this.
You know, we were talking about that, Keith, and the interesting thing about it is we had academics who've been studying this. They're really proficient in it, and it's different now. Like, they use What they did was they analyzed how it was done in the early Soviet era, like the beginning of the Bolshevik Revolution, and then they also analyzed and compared how it was done during the during World War II, and in particular in the Bolshevik era, how it was used to put down the peasantry and Ukrainians and other non-Russian people that Moscow was occupying, and the Jewish question in World War II. Oh, and also they also on the Crimean Tatars. That's there were actually three different distinct Holocausts that were that they were analyzing. So it was the Holodomor, the Ukrainian famine of 1932-33. The Tatar deportations in 1946, and World War II, the Holocaust of the Jews. So what they did was they determined that the strategy and the philosophy behind it was the same, but the tactics were different, and for a couple of reasons. For one thing, there's the technology, which, you know, nobody had the internet or social media back in 1917 and 1930, 1941, you know. And the other thing is that during the Soviet era, and I don't know if this really applies as much to World War II because it was the Nazi regime was not that long compared to the Soviet. But Peter Pomerantsev actually was a speaker today at today's conference, and he pointed out that what's different now is that. In the Soviet era, it was easy to laugh at the propaganda. And he said, most people understand that propaganda is BS. Like, nobody really believes it, but everybody has their different reasons for internalizing it. And I can explain about that later, because it was something Peter Pomerantsev brought up, and it was quite fascinating, and never really thought of it until he pointed it out. But the thing about the Soviet propaganda was back in the day, it was wooden. It was pretentious. It was just goofy. Well, you remember it. You know what?
Right, but you know, Paulette, the thing that I think a lot of now, because being back in the 80s, I used to listen to a lot of Radio Moscow, and I listened to the stuff, let's say that Voice of Russia did over the last 10 years, and now Sputnik. There is a big difference. The stuff that, say, Radio Moscow was putting out in the 1980s, yes, it was blatant propaganda, but they didn't... It just seems that the stuff that came out from Voice of Russia and now Sputnik, now they've gone to a stage of lunacy where that never existed back then. They were at least somewhat serious the way they would talk about issues. Yes, of course, they were pushing the Russian side, but they weren't as a... weird as what they are now.
Okay, well, you know what? It's interesting, but on the other hand, they're very slick. And see, the difference is the thing about propaganda is it's not meant to influence the masses. It's meant to influence activists. And the other thing about it is it's also a tool to, like I was saying before, you know, people... know it's BS. And the people that produce it know that the people know that. But the thing about propaganda is in this case, the more outrageous it is, the bigger the lie, the more ridiculous it is, and the more that it's obvious that the people are don't believe it, but they're still repeating it. What this does is it says the state is powerful. And so the state is like, we're all, and you are nothing. And it's like a mob, how a mob operates, right? It's intimidation. And that's how they're controlling it in Russia. As far as the West goes, all what they want to do in the West is to confuse people to the point that they don't know who to believe. And this, unfortunately, they're quite effective at. And that's a problem that we have in the West, is because the West doesn't have a mechanism to deal with propaganda, because it was Alex Shrimpston from CBC that was also speaking today, and he pointed this out, because the question was, how does CBC deal with the propaganda? And he put it's the same around the world, the Western world, because, you know, they're dealing with this balance, and there are two sides to every story. But nobody knows how to deal with a situation where the other side, quote unquote, is a outright bald-faced lie.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they do then, so when they give them equal time, so to speak, what they're doing is, I get what you said in your introduction, is that they're facilitating, they're helping Putin. They're doing the propaganda. They're, you know, maybe not intentionally, obviously, but they are being essentially useful idiots.
What is quite scary about it, and this is something that I've heard from Russians who worked as journalists back in the 1980s, who maybe retired a few years ago, they said that back in the 1980s, there was a little bit more, say, people were more critical of the government, maybe not as open as in the West, but were more critical and were more willing to speak about it critically than they are now.
Oh, definitely. No question. Absolutely no question whatsoever about that. And it is a different world because, you know, in the 1980s, there had been communism for, you know, 7 years or 60 years prior to that. Whereas now, people had a taste of capitalism, crony as it was, and corrupt as it was. It's an upside down world. Like, nobody knows what's what or you know, it is run by a mob. There's abject poverty. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there is the difference between the very poor and the very rich, and there is no middle class.
Well, let me ask you, for example, in Ukraine, right, the Russian propaganda, let's say that's targeted towards Ukraine, is it, for example, like it once was, for example, when I used to listen to Radio Moscow or even the old Radio Peking, I would listen and you would listen between the lines.
No, it's more outrageous now. And back then there was this ideology thing. It was much more subtle. No, this is outright, just outrageous lies. And, you know, I was in a military hospital visiting a cyborg, an injured cyborg. He's a triple amputee. He was one of the courageous soldiers. I'm sure you followed the story. They were called cyborgs because they held on to Donetsk Airport. They're very smart, very determined, and the Russians were and it was the Russian army that was attacking the Donetsk airport. And, you know, he confirmed that because he was himself an army member of the Ukrainian armed forces. And, but anyways, he was saying that my interpreter was, he didn't speak English, my interpreter was talking about, with him about the propaganda, the stuff that they say. And he says, we just laugh. Because it's so ridiculous, we just laugh at them. So Ukrainians, it's not a matter of reading anything between the lines. There's nothing to read. It is an outrageous lie, and they laugh. I think it's they laugh because, well, for one thing, they need their relief because they're the ones that are being attacked. But the other thing is, they don't know what else do you do. It is outrageous. You can't even begin to address it. It's just so outrageous. And again, it's not about informing. It has other purposes. It has, for the Ukrainians, it has a purpose to demoralize them. And for the West, to confuse so that nobody knows who to believe. Ukrainians know who to believe and who not to believe. But the West doesn't know who to believe or not to believe. That serves Putin right, because what he's doing is he's creating a frozen conflict on the propaganda front, just as he's creating a frozen conflict on the Eastern Ukrainian front.
One final question. What do you think Ukraine has to be doing to counter the stuff that's being put out by Sputnik and RT and some of the other media outlets in Russia?
Well, what they need to do is they need to do better PR. And they are just starting to learn this. This is a society of academics, brilliant academics, and cultured people, educated people. And, you know, they're having a hard time grasping the pragmatism of doing things like PR. The whole concept, they're appalled that at the emotional manipulation in propaganda. And they consider that, you know, it's really beneath anybody to be doing that, and they would rather not. But they have to grapple with that. They have to accept that, yes, they have to do this, but it doesn't mean that they have to compromise their principles or sell out or anything like that. But that's what they have to do. They also have to network a lot more. And Peter Pomerantsev, again, put this very well. He said is what anybody, not just Ukrainians, but anybody in the 21st century, he said that this is the era of disinformation. And as you mentioned again earlier, everybody does propaganda in their own way. And an academic also pointed out that there is, you know, there's good propaganda, bad propaganda, I suppose. What you're doing is you're applying, you're putting judgment on it. Information is propaganda. I mean, everybody is, you know, selling something, right? Whether it's a point of view or a bottle of shampoo or whatever. But when we're dealing with people that are actually lying, this is a problem. This really unravels the fabric of society because our society is built on trust and truth. And you can't have a society when there is no trust and there's no truth. So that's the thing that Ukrainians have to do is to and all journalists, all people in media and government for that matter, anybody in the communications industry has to establish trust and some kind of a mechanism for maintaining truth.
And I was speaking there with Pawan Macquarie. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file. The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
The British DX Club is one of the world's leading DX clubs, with hundreds of members both in the UK and around the globe. BDXE produce a comprehensive monthly magazine called Communication, covering all aspects of the DXing hobby. The BDXE Audio Circle is also available and is a monthly program of DX catches and general chat about radio. For more information, please write to the British DX Club, 10 Hemdeen Hill, Caversham, Reading, RG4, 7SB in the United Kingdom, or visit the website at www.bdxc.org.uk. That's www.bdxc.org.uk.
All right, it's now time to turn our attention to propagation and what we can expect over the next 7 days and what's been happening. Here's Glenn Hauser.
Keith from IPS in Australia. Normal to fair HF propagation is predicted through June 5th at all latitudes. From Met Office UK, the forecast through June 6th, solar activity low, geomagnetic activity mainly quiet, occasionally unsettled. The 27-day long-term DRX magnetic activity forecast from Space Weather Canada as of June 1st in the polar and auroral zones calls for the most nanoteslas on June 9th and 14th. From FK Yanda of the Czech Propagation Interest Group, the geomagnetic field will be quiet to unsettled on June 6th, quiet to active on June 7th, 8th, 9th, 14th, and 16th. Disturbed on June 10th and 11th, mostly quiet June 12th, quiet on June 13th and 17th, active to disturbed on June 15th. The outlook from SWPC in Boulder, geomagnetic field at active levels on June 10th and 14th and 15th, with G1 minor geomagnetic storms likely June 8th and 9th, with ANK indices peaking at 25 and 5. A lesser peak of 15 and 4 on June 14th. Otherwise quiet to unsettled. Lowest A's and K's of 5 and 2 on June 12th and 16th to 27th. Solar flux peaking at 120 June 10th and 11th, dipping to 90 June 23rd to 25th. Bill Hepburn's VHF, UHF microwave DX maps show intense tropospheric ducting around the eastern Caribbean, especially June 8th and 9th. Extreme ducting continues all week around the Arabian Peninsula and along the northwest coast of Mexico.
Thanks, Glenn. And, by the way, if you enjoyed today's program and would like to hear more on the subject that we were just talking about, you can contact us at any time. Our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com, mnp@pcjmedia.com. I'm sure that this is a subject that we will be revisiting in the future. Anyway, to close off today, I thought we'd listen to something that, well, I went out and bought it because I had heard it on Radio Moscow. Yes, I used to listen, as I said earlier, to a lot of Radio Moscow programs. And they had a show that aired on Russian folk music. And there was one program that they did where for 30 minutes they played music by the State Folk Orchestra playing the balalaika. Well, after I heard it on Radio Moscow, I couldn't for the life of me remember the name of the instrument. And I actually went to a local record shop with a cassette recording that I made off-air of Radio Moscow, walked into the classical department and said, I want to buy this. Surprisingly, the shop assistant at this record shop knew it right away and directed me off to the section. So we're going to listen to that on today's program to end it. On behalf of the whole team, I'm Keith Pallon, wishing you all 73 and 88 to the ladies.